Hello and welcome to the Saxon Market Call. It's Thursday, 18th of February, 2021. And before we get into the daily action, I just want to let you know that our fixed income strategist, Altea Spinozzi, will be doing, will be hosting a webinar today at 12 o'clock, so noon European time, 11 o'clock GMT. Altea, tell us what you're going to be talking about. There's certainly a lot more to talk about lately in fixed income than there has been perhaps at times last year.
Yeah, so John, I think that this webinar is going to focus on hot topics in the market. We are going to look at the yield curve and trying to figure out how it's going to move next and where investors can find shelter amid rising yields in the U.S.
All right, good stuff. And with that, in the daily action, so we saw yields heading a little bit higher yesterday, but then coming in quite a bit lower. Treasuries rallying quite a bit. There was, this despite a supposedly very strong U.S. retail sales. I saw an interesting chart, or not chart, but a charts actually, but a post from WallStreet.com talking about there could be a lot of misleading conclusions from this report based on these seasonal adjustments, especially because the internals of what's going on has shifted a bit because of the pandemic in terms of purchasing patterns. Online and for goods relative to entertainment and these things. And so the December number, which looked awful, was actually not as bad as it looked. And the January number, which looked insanely positive, may not have been as positive as it looked. So look out for that link on Twitter. Maybe just an indication that that retail sales number is a bit misleading. And in any case, didn't really provoke shock in markets. Equities kind of having a rocky session. I think that's linked a bit more towards the stimulus concern. There was a news item from CNN discussing Joe Manchin, the Democratic senator, and his unwillingness to participate or vote in favor of a bill that includes too many things beyond the pure spending side of the stimulus. And specifically, this is the progressive left is really insistent on getting this minimum wage hike into the spending bill, which is difficult to put that into the so-called reconciliation process, which is supposed to be limited to only fiscal and spending related measures, and it is what requires the simple majority. When it's a more comprehensive type of reform, which Manchin apparently thinks this minimum wage qualifies as, it has to be broken out into something else, and that requires this 60 vote supermajority for it to pass. And of course, that would be very difficult, i.e. impossible, because of the need to get Republican votes. So I think that's holding it back to a degree, but we're still likely to get, of course, a very large stimulus package. And you see on slide three, the NASDAQ 100 in correction mode a little bit here again overnight. China coming back online. They gapped considerably higher at the open and had a pretty ugly selling all day from the session highs. So not a lot of confidence coming in from the Asian session. And I guess the sort of the concern level ticks up a bit here if we're getting below the 21-day moving average, one of my favorite ones, that's the green one on the chart, around 13,500 for that. And then we had the FOMC minutes last night. Not a whole lot to write home about, very dovish, but I think, and I'll talk a lot more about this with our COO, who we haven't had on the program for a long, long time, far too long, Stan Jakobsen. About his thoughts on the Fed and the potential that they're making a horrible policy mistake here. We'll have him on tomorrow, but just briefly, a couple of quotes pulling here on slide four, that the Fed thinks, on the first one there, the inflation rate over the longer run is primarily determined by monetary policy. Just that statement shows the degree of Fed hubris. What about when you just had a pandemic and you have massive fiscal stimulus without end? What if confidence in fiat currencies nosedives, what if spending levels increase, and especially what if monetary velocity increases? There's clearly a sense that they consider themselves the masters of the universe, even though history has shown otherwise. And then later on, you can see that they're looking through, and that other quote, looking through these temporary factors for inflation, what they say are going to be temporary factors on inflation. And Stan will have a lot to say about that. Among other things, and I'll bring you in here, Ole, on the Baltic Dry Shipping Index, which really notched massive gains yesterday, close to 15%. You can see the chart there on slide five. And this adds to, and I guess Baltic Dry, if I'm not mistaken, is linked especially to sort of bulk commodities, iron ore, coal, et cetera, shipping rates. Adding this to, and it's getting towards the top of the range there, to what we saw in the container market, where we've seen unprecedented prices for container costs and shipping into Europe, which is also on a data series on slide five. But I guess this is to some degree linked with the overall strong bull market in a lot of key commodities.
It is indeed, John, and prices are being driven higher by increased demand. We've obviously seen very, very strong demand out of China now for the past 9 months almost, and signs that it's starting to spread to the rest of the world as we recover from the pandemic and economic activity starts to pick up. So cost of transporting goods across the seas are rising, and that's anything from containers, as you mentioned, to bulk, and it is indeed the big items or big bulky items as iron ore and coal that is participating in this price index. So it is part of the ongoing story, and we saw that in terms of price action overnight. The copper broke higher once again. We had a very strong opening in China, 8,500 on LME, 490 or 390 on the high grade copper. All just highlighting this very, very strong underlying demand that's coming into the market right now. And we mentioned yesterday that the banks are increasingly starting to raise their forecast, currently looking for $10,000 on high grade, also on LME copper over the next 6 to 12 months. But plenty more to talk about, but we can come back to that.
Indeed, and the inflation outlook is going to be really critical. And Altea, I'll get to you in a second on that, because it's very interesting. We have an auction coming up for treasury securities that are inflation protected. But just briefly, interesting to note yesterday, the action not fully linked to U.S. yields, because the dollar remained relatively strong. There are some exceptions, so the Aussie is still quite firm because of a huge rise in iron ore futures again overnight as China came back online. But euro dollar nosediving quite badly from the recent highs, and a considerable move yesterday. You can see that on slide six. We're getting close to that 120 level, and you can see that the 100-day moving average is coming in there. It's also just a major psychological level, and it was the market peak back in late summer of last year. So I think if we're struggling through there, it may not be a broad dollar situation, but it's certainly a euro situation if this is headed lower. And I think two things could engineer a break and stick it back in the range towards 116. And one of those would be higher U.S. yields. So a continued rise in U.S. yields, and especially one that it combines that with higher yields impacting risk sentiment. I think the dollar very much bound up in risk sentiment. So weak risk sentiment equals a stronger dollar. And if that sentiment risk gets, or the risk sentiment decline gets especially large, then it becomes more focused in sort of the EM and commodity currency space more than in euro dollar, but still a major benchmark there. Now let's get over to fixed income, because I really want to pick your brain here. I'll tell you, especially on the TIPS market, and we had a brief discussion before we started the podcast about the situation in break-even rates, which is the difference between the nominal yields and what the yield you're getting on a TIPS, so a treasury with this inflation-protected mechanism. And the fact, very unusual fact, that the two-year TIPS, the two-year break-even rate is well above some, let's call it 45 basis points or so, 40 basis points, above the 10-year break-even yield. What exactly does that mean? And does it have any implications, or what are your thoughts on today's 30-year TIPS auction?
Yeah, John. Well, when we have the front part of the yield curve or the break-even rate curve higher than the long part, it simply means that the market is expecting inflation to be higher on the front end. So basically, in this case, in the next couple of years, and then to get back on check later in the years. But the most interesting thing of that part of the yield curve is that while we have the 2 years break-even rate at 2.6, we have nominal yields almost at zero. So the difference, the spread between the two is huge. And this means that the Fed is controlling this part of the yield curve. And once that the Fed doesn't control it, then the sell-off could be deeper than many would imagine. Going back on to looking at what's happening today and if US Treasury yields are going to hit the pivotal 1.5% in yield, I think it's necessary to have a look at the 30 years TIPS auction that is happening today. Because what has happened in these past few days is that while nominal yields were rising, also real yields were rising too. This is very bad for the Fed because when you have real yields rising, real yields rising tighten economic conditions. And historically, there is a negative correlation between rising real yields and PE ratio in the stock market. So definitely the question here is the 30 years bond auction for TIPS today going to have high demand because the market is going to seek for inflation hedges because it's convinced that inflation will rise, or will it be weak? And so it will provoke a spike in yields in the real part, like in the real yields, and then provoking also further hike in nominal yields. These will be very bad. And I have in slide 7, I have put chart where you can see nominal yields in orange and real yields in blue. And as you can see, when real yields were rising in 2013, well, that matches the taper tantrum. And we don't still see that faster spike in real yields, but it's definitely something to monitor for the days to come. I want also to take you on slide 8, just to understand why we are always talking about this 1.5% resistance level. As you can see here, you have the 10 years yields from the mid-90s until today. And what you can see is that they have been trading within a descending trading channel. So the 1.5% level was established in 2012. We are talking about 10 years ago. And this was served before as a support level, and yields broke last year in March below that and became a very strong resistance level. And this is also why we believe that if nominal yields rise to that level, and also real yields tend to rise with them, then we will see Fed intervention, yield curve control at 1.5%.
Yes, I'll definitely get into that as well tomorrow with staying on the yield curve control because I also see that as inevitable. It's a question of timing and when they're forced to do it more than more than whether. And our suspicion is that we would probably have to see a pretty ugly equity market correction first. You're going to need to see the Fed getting political cover, or the danger for the Fed is it needs to have some kind of market reason to do something like that because of the political implications of expanding its QE to basically cover the budget deficits of the sitting government that's in control. So it's I think it's dicey for them to do yield curve control, but I do think they go there eventually. Gilt's in for a weak session though in the UK yesterday. I don't know if there's any driver behind that, but it looked like it was an even bigger move relative to the previous day's rally than what we saw in the US.
Yes, absolutely, John. So basically, what happened in the UK yesterday is that we had gilts reversing the losses of the previous day. And 10 years gilt yields dropped by 5 basis points. This was mainly due to one of Bank of England speakers saying that there is still space for the central bank to increase quantitative easing. However, in the meantime, the UK was selling bonds with maturity 2035. And the main thing that I would like to highlight is that this bond auction was very silent, but it went okay. It didn't go exceptionally well. There was not a big affluence in these gilt auctions, even though gilts, the yield that they were offering were much higher, around 20 basis points higher than the previous auction. And this is the second time that in the UK we see a weak auction. The previous one, the 2057 that was issued on Tuesday, was also quite weak. And at this point in time, John, I think that it's very important for investors to monitor these auctions, because it in a time where yields are exceptionally important for economic conditions and asset prices cross assets, they might provoke some unexpected sell-off, which the market has not been used in the past few years.
Yes, and I know you've mentioned, and I'm sure you'll be covering it on your webinar later, the symbol weakness you've seen in emerging market offerings.
Yeah.
And that'll be a key to follow as a risk metric for which this seems like to be a bottomless amount of risk appetite in these markets. But I'll say, I mentioned this real rate issue, rising real rates, which are the sort of the toxic thing for gold. And I suppose that's why gold is sort of sucking wind here to a degree. Near support, we see it as a key indicator across markets. What's your take on gold here, and what are the mumblings on in the gold market?
Well, as I put out here on slide 10 in today's deck, I'm basically saying gold is holding the line. The question is obviously whether it can continue to do so, and that line we're talking about is the November low, and also 50% retracement of the March to August rally last year coming in around the 1765 area. So close below that level is potentially sounding or increasing the alarm bells, at least in the short term in the market. And you're right that the fact that gold struggled to respond to rising inflation expectations during the past month, and now the added pain from rising real yields combined with a stronger dollar is really obviously something that is challenging the metal here in the short term. The big one, and I think that's probably one for you and Steen to talk about tomorrow, is at what level could we see the Fed start to contemplate yield curve control? We probably I think Steen's view is that in order to see a yield curve control being introduced, we need to see a bigger move to the downside in stock markets, basically for the Fed to have some ammunition left in the toolbox. So, but if we get to the point that the rising yields, which is creating pain in the short term, ends up driving some sort of yield curve control within a higher rise. In inflationary environment, then clearly we potentially could see a massive game changer for gold and potentially also the dollar. So that's what we'll be keeping an eye on. But in the short term, 1765-ish, that's really the level you need to focus on. And also, you'll probably read some headlines today about Death Cross. We're seeing the 50-day moving average break below the 200-day. That's the first time since June 2018. Normally, it's not a major algo-driven trigger, but it's obviously creating a lot of quite often trigger a lot of headlines. So just be aware of that. And also, I think if we just stay on the commodity space, we can't have this without also mentioning the oil price, because we continue to trade higher. We have seen since last Thursday, Brent crude has given us a new handle every day. So we're now trading, we were trading above $65 in early trading this morning. And the reason being the continued deep freeze situation in Texas, where estimates now are pointing towards a 40% reduction in crude oil production, i.e. more than 4 million barrels a day. That's clearly helping to speed up the rebalancing process at a time where Saudi Arabia is starting to talk about raising production. And they obviously got a golden opportunity to raise production because the market, I think, increasingly desperately need additional barrels. So OPEC Plus is really in a strong position. Later today, we have a delayed inventory report. API last night reported a near 6 million barrel drop in crude stocks. Surveys are pointing to something somewhat lower reduction, but or smaller reduction, but nevertheless, it will still add to the current bullish sentiment in the market.
All right, and of course, earnings season continues apace as well. We will have our head of equity strategy back next week, Peter Garnry, of course. But in the meantime, we had Shopify out reporting yesterday, a super high flyer with its e-commerce platform, and so many, of course, since the pandemic, scrambling to develop an online presence. It announced results that beat on the earnings side, but its 2021 forecast somewhat disappointing. But just showing how quickly the market is to buy the dip, even on a stock that's more or less priced for perfection plus. The stock was down 8.5% at the session lows, but managed to scrape back to a close of only minus 3%. So people swooping in there, but a concern, of course, when something that's priced that way starts to indicate a slowing growth for the coming year. Today, the focus switches perhaps, a lot of places, but especially on applied materials, the semiconductor space with all these supply shortages, a big focus. Applied Materials is the company that makes the stuff that makes chips, so the sort of foundry provider for foundry equipment. And you can see on slide 12, I did a little inset of the earnings. They've managed to creep back towards all-time highs in the most recent quarter, or close to all-time highs in terms of EPS. And the stock price, of course, enjoying the multiple effect of low rates and is near the all-time highs. But of course, the outlook there will be very key for this equity and whether it can maintain the growth path that's established since that hiccup in 2019. So stay tuned for that and other names you're seeing on slide 12, including Walmart and Airbus and Daimler. And then on the economic calendar, we have a very interesting central bank meeting for EM, the Turkish central bank meeting. I've talked about it before. They're not expected to cut rates yet, the Turkish central bank. They have this one-week policy rate of 17%, an amazing level that they had to bring about because of the risk of a currency crisis. They've managed to stabilize and were right at this key 7 level that was such a big focus in dollar versus Turkish lira on the way up. And that pair topped out well above 8 before coming back down to slightly below 7 recently. The key, I don't think, will be the rate decision itself. But they could cut rates if they feel bold enough to do so, but more if they're beginning to forecast that they'll have the luxury to do so at coming meetings. So look for the market reaction to that as well as what they actually say. ECB minutes up. Also later, we have the latest weekly initial jobless claims out of the U.S. I think these are going to take on increasing importance in coming weeks as the U.S. is moving towards opening up more aggressively as the vaccine rollout proceeds. And then, as we noted earlier, this Treasury auction of the 30-year inflation-protected bonds, the TIPS. Yesterday, a 20-year auction had fairly weak demand. That was an interesting one there. But despite that, bonds rallied somewhat. So there you go. For today, we'll call it a day, and we will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.